If you haven't heard about Anchor, it's the easiest way to make a podcast. Let me explain. It's free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. Welcome to the Voice Over Work podcast, an eclectic collection of motivational thoughts, news stories, and research from some of the newest audiobooks on the market. This podcast is brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services. This is Russell Newton. I'll be your host for the podcast, and thank you for listening. Hope things are going well for you today. On the podcast today, we take a little deeper look into a book introduced in a previous podcast with a chapter-by-chapter look at control your emotions, gain balance, resilience, and calm. Find freedom from stress, anxiety, and negativity. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. Chapter 1, Our Volatile Emotions. Though I wasn't the best student in school, I was able to develop a close friendship with my high school English teacher, Mr. Locke. I'm not sure why he took an interest in me, but I suppose a convenient narrative is that he's the reason I ended up as a writer, and I have him to thank for all of it. Unfortunately, that would be false to say, as it's not remotely what we talked about most of the time. Throughout the whole year, it was enlightening to ask him about the books we were reading for class and what he actually thought about them. The Adventures of Tom Sawyer? Overrated. The Great Gatsby? His favorite of all time. Of Mice and Men? He preferred the movie. However, things got really interesting when the end of the year drew close, and he started to open up about the people in my class, my peers. Of course, this was a dream come true for me, an adult willing to gossip with me about my fellow students. Looking back, it was wildly inappropriate for Mr. Locke to engage in such topics with me, but it's not like the other teachers weren't doing it amongst themselves anyway. He would let me in on a little secret of his. Whenever he had to give negative feedback, he would always make sure to try to build up the individual student a couple of days before. He would do this to make sure their self-esteem, at least in the realm of his class, was sufficiently high, such that his negative feedback wouldn't have as big of an impact. He wanted students to not take things so personally and be able to separate his comments on their work from them as a person. Too many students in the past had received his feedback in less than ideal ways. He wanted them to hear, "This paper could use work, not you need work." My teenage mind was blown away, and I told him that he was so clever. Chapter 2, Emotional Triggers. We've all heard it, and we've all felt it. A small provocation that can send our emotions spiraling in a direction that we didn't anticipate, and that objectively shouldn't have any impact whatsoever. This could be that one song that reminds you of something extremely traumatic, or maybe that one person you don't see often enough, but when you do, your emotions are out of your control. It could even be mentioning a single word, such as a name or the word fat, that is the tip of the iceberg in terms of what it represents to you. These are emotional triggers, things that elicit an immediate emotional response. There are positive ones and negative ones, but we don't need help with positive ones. Some can lead to positive emotions, like discovering an item from your childhood that you immediately associate with happiness or love. It boils down to something you have special sensitivity to, and it can impact you for the entire day or even week. With only a few words, you're feeling entirely off-center and fall into a pit of anxiety, depression, guilt, or shame. Why are we so deeply affected by something that we rationally know should not affect us as badly as it does? Can't we be logical creatures that aren't ruled by our emotions? Yes and no. We have emotional triggers because we have lived, struggled, and come of age. No matter how lucky you've been in life, you've had moments of hardship and trauma you never want to experience again. Things that happen in the past, especially when we were children, are often ingrained deep into our minds. We may not have been able to deal with the pain or suffering or embarrassment that we felt when we were younger, so we suppress it. In fact, that's the logical part. We work hard to avoid, deny. Chapter 3. Recognize, respond, and regulate. Our emotions are not always reliable. Recall that they're geared toward ensuring the survival of our species, but that's a goal with somewhat lesser priority in daily life. We know that suppressing them is not the answer, and that you should allow yourself to feel even your darkest of feelings so that you can release them. But there's a time and a place for indulging in all of the emotional needs we've discussed, and sometimes you may just not be in the right situation to do so. Regulating your emotions means dealing with your emotional needs in a healthy and socially acceptable way. This chapter will explain how you can release your emotions in ways that won't make you embark on a downward spiral. Emotions are a constant part of our lives. Every minute of every day, we feel something, and our emotions can change in an instant. There are highs and lows that you experience every day, and how you deal with them can significantly affect your mental state and well-being. Our ability to regulate the vast number of emotions that you feel also affects how the people in your life perceive you. It can be difficult when you're caught up in these moments to regulate your emotions and think of the consequences, but the more you do it, the more it becomes habitual. The first and foremost way of thinking about emotional resilience and calm is the react versus response model. It is succinctly summed up in the image below. Respond, deliberate, aware, solution-based resolution. React, impulsive, unaware, troubled doubt problem. Overall, emotional regulation begins and ends with this image. To react. Chapter 4, Cutting the Cycle. So far, we've talked about the purpose of emotions, common triggers, and the emotional needs that underlie them, and some ways to respond and regulate in healthier ways. These all constitute important knowledge about your inner workings, but at some level, they're just band-aids that we can apply over the emotional pain or discomfort you feel. The true cure to emotional haphazardness is self-awareness and understanding the origins of your emotions. It isn't just about why you feel a certain way, but also about how that feeling took root. Only when you understand the entire sequence of events, from outside, trigger, to inside, emotional need, to outside, coping mechanism, can you hope to cut the cycle short. Sometimes we find ourselves falling into a loop where we're simply in an autopilot state of acting and thinking, which will always lead to undesirable outcomes. Your feelings get hurt, you shout and react, and you compound your negative feelings with guilt and shame. You might think you're engaging in the framework of emotional regulation, and you might think that you're responding rather than reacting, but how can you know? These automated actions are very difficult to see in the heat of the moment because we are so used to doing them without thinking. This is why building self-awareness and understanding the patterns of your thought and behavior are essential for emotional resilience. Without this, you'll only be able to address the symptoms and not the cause. There are a few tools for this, and they emulate talk therapy in some ways because they force you to really analyze your actions and answer questions that you'd rather not. You'll recognize a few elements of these tools from prior chapters, but there's always a different perspective in each new tool that can assist with self-awareness. Chapter 5, The Emotional Immune System. It's been mentioned that self-esteem is the emotional immune system, and for good reason. When self-esteem and not ego is present, it determines how you feel about yourself, your self-talk narratives, and your baseline of resilience. Someone who feels good about themselves is even-keeled and calm, even in the face of failure, because they know they are a three-dimensional being with lots of positive traits and skills. And of course, if you have higher self-esteem, your emotional needs are already more satisfied. This means that fewer things will trigger you, or at least it will take more powerful triggers to affect you. Let's start with low self-esteem, and then we can work our way to healthy self-esteem. This is the feeling that you aren't good enough, that you are inadequate, that you'll be judged by others, and that others will reject you for being who you are. It's a feeling of constant insecurity in yourself and being terrified that others will agree with you. Many of our emotional needs and insecurities stem from this point, that you are somehow less than others. This creates an inevitable dynamic where you are always seeking to be accepted and seen as equal to others. An example of this is a study by Kaichi Onada of Shimane University in Japan. His study found that when our self-esteem is low, we experience rejection as more viscerally painful than when our self-esteem is high. Because of this, we withdraw from others and our confidence is diminished. Having good self-esteem not only gives you feelings of higher self-confidence, but also means that you will better be able to cope with certain pressures. Your internal monologue turns from, "I can't do it," to, "I can handle this." Low self-esteem also makes... Chapter 6, Philosophical Perspective. When we speak of the merits of emotional toughness, the term might be misinterpreted as coldness and distance, or worse, harshness and aggression. There are certainly cases in which efforts to maintain toughness have resulted in actions or statements that are aloof or abusive. But the kind of resilience we're concerned with isn't something we direct toward others. It's about how we manage ourselves, how we rise to challenges or adversity, and how we persist. It doesn't harm our interpersonal relationships. In fact, it's something that actually improves how we connect and care for ourselves and others. In this chapter, we'll discuss two similar ways to develop and refine emotional resilience. Both have roots that go back thousands of years, so the fact that we're still talking about them speaks to their lasting influence. One was popularized by the famed philosopher Emperor Marcus Aurelius of ancient Rome, while the other was developed by the one and only Buddha. Both deal with how we perceive the emotional substance of our realities and how regulating our feelings and temper is essential to experiencing a happy life. Additionally, they both work from the perspective of the vast universe and our tiny, insignificant place in that universe. Detachment. Attachment is the origin, the root of suffering. Hence, it is the cause of suffering. The Dalai Lama, 1988. The tenets of detachment are in the first known volumes of Buddhist thought, the Pali Canon. It's expressed as Nekhama, which roughly translates to renunciation. We often refer to this trait as detachment, but it's perhaps more accurately expressed as non. Chapter 7, Preventative Care. As we've discussed, and you have no doubt noticed from your own life, the brain maintains a strong negativity bias. Our continued survival depends on our ability to keep harmful elements at bay as much as possible. Dangerous encounters, food one is allergic to, toxic people or situations to avoid, and so forth. But because neural activity in response to negative signals is so strong, it can cease being an effective survival mechanism and become an obstacle to your emotional stability and overall happiness. We've gone over many techniques and tools for keeping it together and even keeled in the face of emotional triggers and feelings of impending doom. But what about the everyday ways in which this negativity bias affects us? Part of the battle in staying even with your emotions is to actively battle this instinct and generate your own positivity. To a lot of us, that's no small task. Negativity is more accumulative than positivity, piling up in the psyche with seemingly little effort. It's easy for the brain to lie back and let fears, terrors, and anxieties unfold one after the other. When they get to a certain mass, negativity bias starts to feel like an anchor that can't be overcome. We tend to categorize positivity as something that requires more labor, an exhaustive act that might not even make a significant dent in our negativity in the end. But in reality, Positivity is a force that pays off, even when we take small steps to bring it about. It's far easier to inject positivity into our lives and emotions than our negativity would have us think. Improving your emotional response and coping mechanisms will always be effective. Control your emotions. Gain balance, resilience, and calm. Find freedom from stress, anxiety, and negativity. Written by Patrick King, narrated by Russell Newton. More information regarding today's book and the author can be found at audible.com or amazon.com. Show notes and further information can be found at russelericnewton.com. With a collection of trivia, research, news stories, and knowledge from some of the newest audiobooks on the market, this has been the Voice Over Work Podcast, brought to you by Newton Media Group, a family of creative services.